and welcome to a special episode of The Blotter Presents. That music is from the delightful Ocean's 11 soundtrack, composed by Mr. David Holmes, and it's introducing my roundup of the best reads, listens, and watches of the true crime year, Blotter's 11. What you've just heard was at least my fifth attempt to get all those cues to line up. I'm still not sure I nailed it, but we gotta move on. As you are listening to this, it is Boxing Day 2018, or after that, so I apologize for not getting this list put together in time for you to holiday shop. But if you've got a gift card to a media retailer burning a hole in your wallet, my list might help you with that. Blotter's 11 is pretty straightforward. It's the 11 true crime properties I thought the most highly of in 2018. That's three books or magazine articles, three podcasts, and five films or TV series. This was a banner year for the genre, and the podcast best ofs in particular were a bitch to narrow down, which is why I'm cheating the exercise with a couple honorable mentions in each category. In the show notes, you'll find relevant links, either to the episode in which I discussed the property in question, or if I didn't discuss it, to the article or show itself. Alrighty. Egghead loves her bookie wooks and long-form articles, so let's get started with the top three reads. Because this really is the most wanted of the calendar year, let's hear that most wanted cue. The best read of the year takes this category going away for me, and that is Bad Blood by Wall Street Journal reporter John Carreyrou. It's about a scam. It's perpetrated by a fascinating weirdo. And it's written smoothly and lets the story speak for itself, even when Carreyrou becomes a part of said story thanks to empty coat litigation. We covered it in episode 70, and I really can't recommend it strongly enough. Speaking of scams, the next entry is from the Summer of Scam podcast episode from July. That's Jessica Pressler's piece on Anna Delvey for New York Mag / The Cut. The internet is a little coy as to what the article is actually called, but Googling how Anna Delvey tricked New York, or even just Pressler Delvey, should bring you straight to it. Pressler reports the hell out of the story, with a mix of granular New Yorkery detail, with a Vanity Fair tone that makes Delvey's story almost aspirational. The way VF writers used to describe what a cheap shit brick Susan Goodfriend was, with a mix of loathing and admiration. It's really good writing about the kind of story I never get sick of. Last but not least, it's a late entry, I just read it last week, from a piece that dropped very early in this year, Kathleen Hale's Living with Slenderman on Hazlitt, which investigates whether Morgan Geyser is responsible for her role in the stabbing of Bella Leutner, whether anyone is getting justice from the sentences she and Anissa Weyer received, and what Wisconsin's handling of two juvenile accuseds says about us as a society. Hale wrote another piece last year about some murders in rural Ohio that is similar to this one in its super readability. Hale can sometimes elbow into the frame a little bit or stop the reporting to do a tone poem, but that's what Hazlitt is about, and it's not unlikable. I haven't talked about Hale's work on podcasts, but I will link it in the show notes. I did talk about I'll Be Gone in the Dark, and while it didn't quite make my best of list for reads for the year, it was impressive work, and they caught the fucker. Moving on to my best listens of 2018, we've all read enough year-end think pieces / despairing tweets about year-end think pieces in progress about what a great year it was for podcasts, so I will spare you, but yeah, getting this down under 8 was a job. And I couldn't just give podcasts more space on the list because the TV and documentaries section was an even scrappier street fight without narrowing that list to 4. And who's the asshole who only gave me 11 spots to work with? Right, that was myself, and it was totally arbitrary, but nobody needs a list of sode that goes on for 82 minutes, so I stuck with 3 entries, and the first one was also the subject of the first Blotter Brief. That's Last Scene, about the Isabella Stewart Gardner Museum heist. It's not about a murder or a false confession nobody can seem to get reversed, which is a nice change of pace for me, but I wouldn't call it light either. And Kelly Horan and her expensive-sounding speaking voice strike just the right tone and take the topic seriously, but she doesn't take herself too seriously. I have fallen a bit behind, But I'm looking forward to distracting myself from post-holiday cleanup with the last two episodes, and once again, I talked about that one in brief number one. In episode 64, I talked about Slow Burn, and I went back and forth about whether this merited inclusion, but I had to conclude that it did. Just as I've had to conclude that Bill Clinton, for whom I voted twice, committed crimes, unforgivable ones. And that by reducing Monica Lewinsky, Linda Tripp, Paula Jones, and others to the sum of their late-night monologue dismissible parts, we helped him get away with them. Leon Neyfakh's storytelling lays out the Clinton impeachment of 20 years ago clearly and lets us feel a little bit guilty, a little bit responsible, but it isn't manipulative and it isn't just a reckoning with the snotty lowlights of my own feminism. It's paced well, it's informative. Let's face it, a lot of shit happening on the world stage during my mid-20s is lying in a heap in the hall of memory somewhere, and the way it implicates the crucible these events created as forging the right-wing mongering we see consuming the country from the inside out today is no joke. The last of my top three listens for 2018, Dr. Death, which we talked about in episode 74. Laura Bale's build is flawless in the story of a shitty surgeon and the even shittier system that let him keep killing and maiming people. And the story itself is both terrifying and fascinating in its con artistry core. Bale uses great detail but doesn't over-embroider, and I had no urge to, quote, Google ahead to see what happened to Christopher Dunch. I was content to let the podcast unfold. Not too content, though, because once I started it, I ripped through the whole thing in a day. Wrapping up the listens with some very honorable mentions, including Rachel Maddow's Spiro Agnew explainer Bagman, the RFK tapes, which might have clambered onto the podium if they'd foregone the weird follow-up episodes at the end, and Bear Brook, which certainly doesn't need my help publicity-wise, but everything you've heard about it is right on. Suspenseful, lean storytelling, and I recommend it. Alrighty, final five, best watches of 2018. I could probably have done 11 just on TV and films, so let's start with a couple that just missed the cut. The Innocent Man, which I've just spoken about on episode 79, about the mis-solved murders of Ada, Oklahoma. And What Haunts Us, a very personal and very affecting documentary about a prep school predator that I mentioned in brief 13. But a tiny step above the honorable mentions are my best five of the year, starting with Making a Murderer Part 2 from episode 73. Kathleen Zellner and her manicures that so ensorcelled me and Rebecca Lavoie is an enthralling, imposing figure. The story remains gripping and frustrating. The filmmakers have a good rhythm with the subject and the people entangled in it. This one didn't grab the country by the nads the way the first one did, but most second seasons don't, and I thought really well of this one. I also thought really well of American Vandal's second outing, which was the lead topic in episode 69. 69. I understand the criticisms of the season. I understand that people didn't plug into it the same way. I just didn't agree, and I don't think the second season got nearly enough credit for interrogating the NCAA's scholar-athlete, quote, system, and the shadow societies it can create. Melvin Gregg absolutely killed it as DeMarcus. No, it wasn't nearly as funny as season one, but it was sometimes funny. God bless Sam. And I liked that it was sadder the second time around, that it commented on that aspect of crime, that it indicted bullies, the athletic scholarship system, privilege, and social media, doing with rueful verite elegance what 13 Reasons Why's second season stumbled in even attempting. Now American Vandal is canceled, and I'm okay with that too. Going on top, right? And that's where it was, even if that's not what you tuned in for. And no, I'm not saying you watched it wrong. Here's what I am saying. You may have skipped watching HBO's The Sentence. Go watch it now. It's a powerful portrait of the thoughtless sexism of sentencing statutes via just one of the thousands of families those statutes have sundered. I talked about it in episode 72, and I didn't expect to find it so affecting. You see enough front lines on this, and there have been myriad, and you don't necessarily think there's anything left to learn, but The Sentence is worth your time. So is Rest in Power, which we discussed way back in episode 66. Trayvon Martin's story has never really left us. Quote, thanks in no small part to that jag George Zimmerman being terminally unable to stay out of the news for shooting and hitting other people and being a big bowl of garbage soup. But the story stopped being Trayvon's story pretty early on, it seemed like. And Paramount Network's Rest in Power, like that same network's Khalif Browder story, is a careful but still angry exploration of Trayvon's murder and its aftermath that may have flown under the collective radar this year. I'm not rightly sure how you're going to find it to watch it, but Google around, make the effort, it's worth your time. Paramount had a few missteps with their scripted takes on crime stories. I thought that Waco thing was a snoozer, alas, but they're still bringing it with straight nonfiction. And now, the last best watch of the year, which was a scripted take on a crime story, specifically American Crime Story, The Assassination of Gianni Versace, one of the best things I put in my brain last year in any form, period. I can't tell you enough good things about Darren Criss's performance as Andrew Cunanan, about Cody Fearn as David, about the production design, and about the writing, which managed to have compassion for everyone in this tragic waste of humanity, and to provide a powerful commentary on the toxic dome under which homophobia has forced so many to live, crouched and bent over the years. It's infuriating, gorgeous, and desolating. I recapped it for previously.tv, but I could only get so close to its devastating effectiveness, so go watch it for yourselves. And that's it. Thank you so much for everyone who commented on social media to remind me about properties I might have forgotten were even from this year, which, let's face it, was a long one on the crime beat just in Washington, D.C., am I right? And once again, if you didn't remember slash manage to write down everything I've mentioned, no worries. It's all in the show notes. Thank you so much for listening this year. Have a great holiday week, and I'm very excited to bring you more content in 2019. Speaking of more content, here's what's coming up. No new main pod next week, though I'll be dropping a few briefs, teehee dropping briefs. Plus, Patreon tipsters will also get some proprietary briefs to cover, cover a handful of the annoyingly legion true crime premieres clustered around New Year's. Like, can a host just get a hangover and not have to worry about your ass knocking over the tree, Oxygen Network? If you'd like those extras, join the tipster team at patreon.com/blotterpresents, and Blotter Presents is also where you can find me on Facebook and Twitter. Later in January, it's Mark Blankenship on R. Kelly, Piper Weiss on her book You All Grow Up and Leave Me, crime novelist and Lethal Lit podcaster Alex Segura helps me revive the Blotter Book Club, and much more. Once again, I'm Sarah D. Bunting, and I confidentially inform you that I hope you'll tune in next time.